and it went like.
Hello, everybody. This is Patty Toledo. We are here with Buas Games Grindset. And today we have a very special show. First of all, I want them to introduce themselves and then I'm going to tell you what we're talking about because this is going to be super exciting. So we have Ronnie and Bojan here. And Bojan, I tell you, say your name wrong. I say everybody's name wrong. That's kind of like my pet peeve now that I say everybody's name wrong. So go ahead, introduce yourselves, please.
Yeah, I can start with a name. the correct one. It's Bojan.
Okay, yeah. Fair.
So we don't do a J instead of the J. I'm Bojan Endrovski, and I'm a lecturer here at Breda University of Applied Sciences. I've been here for about 9 years now, and I teach programming. And within programming, I focus on things like mathematics and rendering. And of course, procedural generation.
Programmer for the ones that don't know that by that point.
Yeah, indeed.
Nice. And Ronnie?
Yeah, so I'm Ronnie Franken. I'm with Buas since 2007. So that's quite a long time. That's almost since the start of the games program. I teach in visual arts. I'm a visual arts teacher. And more specifically, procedural modeling and production design.
And this is a really good segue because today we're going to be talking about the Everything Procedural Conference, which is one of the like big events that we do here at Buas Games and in our pride and joy, and it's coming in April. So I wanted to talk about that with you guys. I wanted to start with very, very basic, getting in mind that not everybody that listens to the radio will know what procedural content is. So let's start from a very basic. What it is, procedural content creation.
Yeah, I think it's in the name. and a procedure is a sequence of steps that you undertake. And in this case, refers to technical steps. So this would be an algorithm that creates something for you, that creates content. So instead of painting or making a model by hand, pushing one vertex at a time, you write something that will do that for you. So you make an algorithm that will do that for you. I say write, it's not always written. So there are tools there that can help you out with that. And we also cover those. And it's not only models or meshes or something like that. Of course, it can be music, it can be textures for games, it can be models themselves, it can be whole levels. So depending on how you're approaching the game that you're working on.
Nice. Do you want to add anything, Ronnie?
Well, I think that's pretty clear what Bojan just explained. I think what's important is that you think more about it as a rule set versus making something from a reference or something, right? So I teach primarily in the arts department. And what I want students to do is to really analyze the subject to try to understand it. That's basically what we always want them to do. But in this case, they also need to derive rules that they then can feed into a system, for instance, Side Effects Houdini, to basically generate content automatically, but still are directed by you as an artist. So it's not that the system takes over. I actually think that you as an artist should consider yourself the art director that tells the system what it should generate. And then it's up to you as an artist, of course, to push the system into new areas that you maybe didn't envision before that.
I think that was a description given at some GDC talk by the team behind No Man's Sky.
Possibly.
That creating a game, creating art with procedural generation felt like having 1,000 very low skilled artists that you need to direct very, very directly. So it's like 1,000 interns that you need to manage, and that's the approach that they took for that game.
That's a good way to explain that. I will ask you, maybe it's a stupid question, maybe it's not. Bear with me here. And, you know, for the background, this is not scripted. They don't know I'm going to ask that. And you will see the panic in their faces. If you had camera, you would see the panic in their faces. Well, what is the difference between a procedural content and AI-generated content?
Well, that's a good question. And probably it's quite difficult to put a line between one and the other. That's why we are covering both. And at EPC, traditionally, the procedural generation would be quite handcrafted by a person. And the person is completely aware of the steps that the algorithm will do. With AI, usually we don't necessarily care about the steps. The steps are learned and they are embedded into the matrix that makes up that model. So it ends up being a bunch of numbers and coefficients, and when they're multiplied together, they give a certain kind of output. And the one making that is not necessarily aware of exactly what is happening, what is the thinking process behind that. So it's training, and then it applies what has been trained. And in traditional procedural generation, there is not necessarily a training step, but it's more like a handcrafting an algorithm for something.
Yeah. I'm happy I didn't ask anything stupid. Go, Ronnie.
I guess it's less of a black box. I think AI is maybe a black box where it's difficult to see what actually happens inside, where in procedural systems, you're kind of still in control of what Bayon just mentioned, all the steps that happen in that process.
Yeah, and from a learning point of view, it might be a lot more interesting as well, because you can see everything that is happening there, so you can learn from the process as well, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but I think AI is there, and also in procedural methods, AI is used. And yeah, if you look at the conference, we have quite a few talks now that also include AI subjects. So yeah, I think it's embracing both to reach the goals that you have set for yourself or the project.
Yeah.
So good segue. So what is the Everything Procedural Conference? Like what should they expect besides what we discussed? What should people expect from it?
It's an annual conference that we started in 2016. And we just checked that we started probably with six speakers or maybe seven if we have something, if we have missed something, and a single day of a masterclass, one masterclass for a single day. And by now it's almost a week of an event. It happens always in April, and it's a week that we dedicate to procedural generation. It's a niche topic, and we try to bring everyone that is keen on learning more about that niche topic to bring them under one roof here in Breda on our campus. And this year, just like last year, we have four different masterclasses that are followed by that run for 2 days, and they are followed by a 2-day conference with I think more than 9 speakers per day. We have a section in the middle of the conference that is the most, I guess, fast and intense part of the conference. And that's where our students show their work.
Nice.
And I think there will be 9 of them in 1 hour. So yeah, the content has exploded over the years, what we are presenting at EPC.
But it's for sure a gathering of game developers. Primarily, it's not only game developers, but the majority is. That all share passion for that same area within game development. It doesn't really matter if they're art, design, or programming. I think we serve even music, so I think we serve a variety of roles in that sense. And I think especially the gathering in the community, I think that's where the event really stands out. So there was 1 year also during COVID where we switched to online. It was maybe regarding the visitors the most successful, but afterwards it was clear that we need to be, kind of together to talk about the challenges that we have during game development and all the cool stuff that we're basically doing.
Do you think that procedural content creation is expanding? You said that it's already used in music and in other, but as we were discussing, that AI is part of that as well. Do you see it expanding further from coming from niche to something more popular?
I think that putting it as a niche, it's interesting because the very first games, they were procedural by the very nature of them.
True.
They were built by people who had academic background. They were programmers. They were technical people. They did not draw anything by hand until a certain time. So a lot of the beginnings of the very first games, like Pong and whatnot, the very first games were all procedurally generated. The very beginning of the industry, it's quite procedural. But then as the tools got better and better and better, there was more, I guess, opportunity for control. But now we are moving in a direction where the worlds are so big that making those by hand becomes quite quite some work. It's not only the size of the worlds, it's also the detail that is expected.
And also it becomes expensive, right? Like if you do everything by hand in really, really big world, it's not only not feasible in time, it's also not feasible in money, I would imagine.
Absolutely. We have a lot of talks that focus on that.
It's also not the most interesting work to do, right? There's a lot of, if you would have to manual place every tree in a game, I'm not sure if there's any artist so proud that they want to do this manually, I think. Right? So I think it's good to use these systems to automate some boring, repetitive tasks so that people can really focus on the things that really matter and that make a project or a game stand out.
True.
Right? So I think that's a big opportunity also of procedural content.
And I think it's often viewed in this respect as a cost saver. It can also be a pitfall if you only view it from that regard, because sometimes the lead-in time to develop a procedural pipeline can be costly and time consuming in itself. But what I think it's a great opportunity to also see it as unique to our medium, that we can change things as the player is experiencing. So that's unique to games. Movies don't do that. Music doesn't necessarily do that unless you're at a concert and you scream loud enough to influence. But in games, it's very normal to have your gameplay influenced by what the player is doing. And then we can embrace procedural generation to more than just, let's make this quickly. Then it can be a different experience for everyone that tries the game. They can all view their own parts of the game that might be slightly different than someone else. So I think it's also... It gives opportunity to really explore the games as a medium in a way that it's unique to them. So I think it's more than just a world builder.
True. Then what for the again, I always try to talk in a way that people that don't know anything about game development but is interested and want to come and learn about that, hopefully new students that will come here and also see the conferences live. Can you give them some examples, some games, some experiences that are famous and created with the procedural content? So just for them to have an overview of how that could be.
I think there are a lot of videos about Horizon, both Horizon Zero Dawn and the follow-up Forbidden West. And they've given some talks both here and at a GDC and with... Guerrilla is a company that it's close by. They're based in Amsterdam. They're part of Sony, and we collaborate quite tightly with them. A lot of our students have started their careers there, or even with their internships. And you could not be. It's not possible to build that size of a world by hand. It's not even possible to store all of that on the disc that is the game. So not every blade of grass has an exact location within the game. So a lot of that gets created as you are walking around. So those blades of grass get placed as you walk around. Those trees often gets placed as you move about. And I think I can quote them. They say that about 25% of what you experience in the game has been touched by a human hand that has been modeled, but the other 75% is in one way or another procedurally generated. That doesn't mean that all those trees are made by an algorithm, but definitely where they are placed within the world probably is determined by the algorithm, and certainly it only happens when the player is close enough. Like the trees that are 1 kilometer behind you, they don't exist in a game. That's in every game ever. But I think that they're often not even stored. And the other aspect is, I think, the art creation. We had a talk where they explain how they did the aging of buildings. So they would start off with what is a pretty standard military base and then do calcificate, so do stalactites and stalagmites, and it sometimes they even meet in the middle, and it creates this very rich scene that combines the technical world with something that looks aged and looks like a cave a bit. And doing this by hand, probably it's very tasking, I guess, quite boring. And this way it just follows the physics, it just follows the rules of physics, and then it accumulates calcium until it becomes what it is. So that's one example from a game that a lot of people have played, and they're aware that it's quite big, and there are a lot of other levels on which probably procedural generation is employed. I think that textures for a long while have been made by a mix of tools like Substance Designer. I think that making by hand, it's probably quite uncommon. Probably it's for most studios by now, it's a combination of photogrammetry for references and then going to another tool like Substance.
I think the game No Man's Sky that Boyan also mentioned, I think is a good example as well. I think that's maybe, I think, one of the most famous examples of a small team building
big games, yeah.
At least in recent years, let me put it that way. And then I think we also have those smaller developers like Oscar Stahlberg that did Townscaper. And
shout out for Oscar from Malmo, friend.
Yeah. He was at the conference, I think, two or three times by now.
Yeah.
He's lovely. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I flew to Malmo partially to see him and have a chat, and it's been inspiration as well that we frequently share here, and both the methods and the approach of combining. I think that he's exactly that he combines technical knowledge and creativity to make something that gels together. That's the very essence of procedural generation.
And another recent example is Tiny Glade, right? So the Tiny Glade game that is built by Anastasia Opera, who's an alumni of this school.
And her partner, Tomasz.
And her partner, yes. So, but he's not from this school, right?
No.
But Anastasia is, I think, that is also a project, a two-man rock star team that builds something that, you know, that is amazing, right? And I think that would not have been possible without a procedural mindset.
And I have to do one shout out that our student team that are still students still here from Pizza Apocalypse got an award from Houdini for their work with procedural content. Yeah. So it's like, yes, I always like when our students get awarded for things that they did here. It's amazing.
Yeah, they did some really smart things last year in their year two project, you know, to automate some processes. But again, it's not only about the automation of things. It's also about defining the look, right? And also proceduralism can help defining the look of a game or to really ground it or to really make it look awesome and good.
For me particularly, I'm very indecisive. And what procedural generation helped me is delay decisions. Like,
we're all guilty.
procrastination as a game development technique that I don't make decisions until I see the options. And with procedural generation, you can decide to change something really, really late in the pipeline. It's like, oh, this building doesn't really fit here. Let's remove the building. And instead of now having to ask like 5-6 artists to now go and fix this level because I just removed a building and added another thing. You can just delay those decisions and tweak the length of a level. You know, this is too long or this is too short. Then you can decide to change that, to compact it and delay the decision until you have more information.
Nice. So what is tell the audience a little bit what is happening doing EPC this year? What are like main talks? How is it structured? Everything that you want to share. How does it work?
Well, the first thing that I can say is go to our website.
Easier one, everythingprocedural.com. Could not be easier.
Yeah, exactly. There we have the lineup, and we will add more talks if there are some that have not been announce, or if they're incomplete, it's like they're missing screenshots or something. We are starting off with four masterclasses.
Yeah, so those are a masterclass is a 2-day activity, and we have four choices, right?
Nine to five.
So that's both Tuesday and Wednesday. We have three masterclasses that focus on Houdini, and that goes from beginner to really advanced, advanced production deep dives. And this year we also have a Blender masterclass that focuses on geometry nodes in Blender.
Nice.
Then on Thursday, Friday, we have the conference. So that's 2 days. That's all in our beautiful chapel here in Breda. The chapel holds about 300 visitors. So it's a really nice group. It's not too big, but it's for sure also not too small, where we like Boyan already mentioned, have about 9 talks both Thursday and Friday. So different talks, right? And also on different subjects, going from audio to level design to language models to Houdini, all those all together.
Yeah, indeed. And as I mentioned, in the middle, we have the section for the students. And this is important because they do amazing work and they are looking for an internship. So it's a good place for as well to come and see what the students are up to and maybe have a conversation with them. We have I don't know, how many talks do we have in total?
On the conference?
On the conference.
I think it's 18 now.
Yeah. Something like that, like 2 times. And some of the talks are by more than a single person delivering the talk. Also the masterclasses, they're all handled by a crew of people. And they're a mix. I think that it's a nice mix that we have this year as well. We have at least one on procedural music. Indeed, we have procedural storytelling. We don't have anyone doing architecture. We've had that before.
No, not this time.
That's all.
Yeah, but it changes every year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sometimes we don't have anyone on audio. And it's a mix between design tasks and art tasks. So it's not really purely focused on how to do technical art. I'm a programmer myself, so I'm not necessarily... so I'm taking care of the other part of the program that is not necessarily tied into art. That's why we have the two of us. It would be nice to have a designer as well, but...
Next time, design is
easy. I think that between me and Ronnie, we cover some level. It's a joke. It's a very broad thing, and it would be great maybe in the future if a design teacher would join us as well to organize this. But we are hunting for a lot of design talks. A lot of the talks are about how to create certain experiences like levels and open world games. And we have at least 2 returning speakers. So that's great. We have a lot of returning audience coming back every year because it's quite a nice, cozy atmosphere during the conference. We have our lunches in the canteen of the school, and it's a nice place to meet people. We also organize a bit of an after party.
Yep.
And sometimes in the middle of the conference, people, because they are coming here frequently, they know each other, they've met each other before. We have the Discord server and they self-organize and go for dinner while we are busy getting the space ready. And it's good to see that there is a community building.
And there is a sense of continuity as
exactly.
well. There is a lot of interest from the industry, from the professionals of the industry to come and meet. I think for people that are from outside, it might sound new or unique, but no, this is something that people have been discussing for a very long time, and people already expect and wait for the event every year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We see that, especially in the first, I think that in the first month or so, we see that the tickets almost entirely go to sources that have been here before, and it's also the same companies that often send maybe a slightly different team. But we have two speakers that are coming back, and we wanted to give new people a chance to talk. So that's why we limited that to 2. Actually, we had quite a few more people that were interested in coming back. So Nikolai is coming back. That was a lovely talk a couple of years ago.
It was a lot of energy for sure.
Yeah. And Len is coming with a new game, Hyper Light Breaker.
Yep.
So that one is something that I am personally quite a bit looking forward to because it completely mixes all of those things. That it's a different experience every time you play it, but it's also created in a way that uses these procedural tools. And yet when you play it, it feels very handcrafted. It doesn't feel like I'm playing this thing that I've seen before. This is exactly like that, or it's very repetitive, or whatever complaint you get about. In fact, I think that if we would not talk about it here, most players would not know that the game is procedurally generated beyond the fact that it's slightly different every time.
Yeah, and another thing I wanted to mention is that the audience is quite mixed. So I think of the full audience, it's about 60% industry. So that's a really big group. And it's also a very international audience. Of course, mainland Europe is obvious because that's close by. But even in 2016, we were surprised by a team of five Japanese developers.
Nice.
That came to Breda, and I was just not sure what was happening and even how they found out about, you know, that, well, I could get that back, how they found out about us, but still. Right, so people are flying in, let's say, from everywhere, if you like. Like Boyan said, also during lunches, during the breaks, but also in the evening, you know, almost everyone is gathered in Breda. And Breda is a nice, cozy city to also informally meet up and have dinner, go to a bar or something. So I think that's also important about the event, right? It's the gathering of...
The networking is really strong here, right? Let's do a shout out for the sponsors, because I know you have really impressive sponsors.
Yeah, of course, SideFX is sponsoring the event, has been a partner since the start. They provide a lot of the masterclasses and conference talks.
We are also an official trainer from Houdini.
Yeah, so that's really good. We have Larian this time that we're sponsoring. IO Interactive is also sponsoring. And I think AMD is also sponsoring this year.
They offer to provide some hardware. Probably they will be a partner hardware for the event. Even shout out to our previous sponsors. They have helped a lot shape the conference. I think that Epic Games has been a great partner through the years.
Right? Also this year, they're providing one of the talks. So,
And we are Golden Rio Academic partners as well.
Indeed. Yeah. And other local studios as well. I think that Guerrilla often provides some interesting content. And also we have DGA and Breda City, which is the Dutch Game Association. And
Breda Game City.
Indeed. Breda Game City, which is a local collective. So.
But as we were saying, there is a community, and this community has been around for a while, and all the companies have been supporting. Not only, it's not like a commercial conference where people put money because they want propaganda and that's it. They put money because they believe in the content, they know of the quality of the conference, and they want to invest in the quality and bring information to people.
They support it. It's a non-profit event, right?
Yeah.
And basically, we have the industry people pay for the students, kind of.
That's effectively, kind of the student tickets are heavily subsidized by the industry because they're running at a very high discount. I think we have at 70% for students.
Yeah. And even less or even more for our own students.
For our own students,
So then to finish this, I wanted to ask you, if the companies that are listening now, that are really interested on the conference, that maybe never came before, don't know anything about it, I hope that you learned quite a lot by listening to this podcast and now you know better. But what would be your last advice for them if they are still kind of on the fence if they should come or not?
Well, we are not unbiased.
Nobody here is unbiased. No, we want you to come.
Yeah, well, also the topic, if you would ask me if it's high quality conference, of course is people that we thought that are great to listen to a talk from them. It's who we invited, or from the talks that were sent to us, as in people that applied for a talk. We sat down and we picked the ones that we find more interesting. Yes. So we are as biased as it gets. But definitely, I think that it's a unique event, and it's a unique opportunity to focus only on this narrow topic for full days. I also think that the masterclasses provide a lot of educational value that it's hard to replicate. That in 2 days you get full guidance from professionals from Houdini. The Blender masterclass this year is provided as well directly by Blender themselves. So I think that that's a very unique perspective, and definitely should give it a try. And then decide for next year if you want to skip it. But I would say if you've heard the podcast, you should definitely, if you're interested enough in this topic, you've heard the podcast, then definitely I would advise to come by.
Yeah, I think it's for sure one of the biggest events in the Netherlands, and for sure I think on the topic in Europe, if not worldwide. So I think I talked to a few visitors that came more regularly, and I think for some of them it has been a career-changing event because they were maybe not so sure about procedural content or about Houdini, for instance. Then learn about it while being here, and then basically just by putting time in and effort, learning about this stuff, meeting the right people, networking, they found new jobs and basically set new career paths. So I think, to me, it sounds like
it's a no-brainer.
Like a no-brainer, yeah. So they need to go to the website.
I think there are very few companies that are not embracing more of it. Yep. I think there are very. I still haven't heard the studio that decided, you know what, this hasn't. We're gonna scale down procedural generation. It's way better to just do everything by hand. That's not the tendency that we are seeing. I'm yet to meet a studio like that.
Yep.
Yeah. So the part that for me is super interesting, and I think it's gonna be interesting for the audience as well, is that it's not only good for big companies, and we use some examples, but indie developers clearly, yep, because we also use some examples. But I think also now more than ever, when we know that the games industry is not the easiest one to get in at the moment, and we can't play that there aren't any crises going on, the fact that you can come and learn a skill that is going to be used by, if it's not already used by every studio, it's a need. Like, you must be and learn from that. So if you don't know anything about it, but you want to learn, this is a really good place for you to start and to get a point out of it.
Yep, agreed.
Yeah, fully agreed.
Guys, thank you very much.
Thank you, Betty.
And I see you guys next week. Thank you. And then it went like...